made the insupportable claim that the House should have enforced its subpoenas in court and allowed the president to delay his impeachment for years. If we had done so, we would have abdicated our constitutional duty to act on the overwhelming facts before us and the evidence the president was seeking to cheat in the next election. We could not engage in a deliberately protracted court process while the president continued to threaten the sanctity of our elections. Resorting to the courts is also inconsistent with a constitution that gives the House the sole power of impeachment. If the House were compelled to exhaust all legal remedies before impeaching the president, it would interpose the courts or the decision of a single judge between the House and the power to impeach. Moreover, it would invite the president to prevent his own impeachment by endlessly litigating the matter in court, appealing every judgment, engaging in every frivolous motion or device. Indeed, in the case of Don McGahn, the president's lawyer who was ordered to fire the special counsel and lie about it, he was subpoenaed by the House in April last year, and there is still no final judgment. A president may not defeat impeachment or accountability by engaging in endless litigation. Instead, it's been the long practice of the House to compile core evidence necessary to reach a reasoned decision about whether to impeach, and then to bring the case here to the Senate for a full trial. That is exactly what we did here, with an understanding that the Senate has its own power to compel documents and testimony. It would be one thing if the House had shown no interest in documents or witnesses during its investigation, although even there, the House has the sole right to determine its proceedings, as long as it makes the full case to the House, as it did. But it is quite another when the president is the cause of his own complaint, when the president withholds witnesses and documents and then attempts to rely on his own noncompliance to justify further concealment. President Trump made it crystal clear we would never see a single document or a single witness when he declared, as we just watched, that he would fight all subpoenas. As a matter of history and precedent, it would be wrong to assert that the Senate is unable to obtain and review new evidence during a Senate trial, regardless of why evidence was not produced in the House. You can and should insist on receiving all of the evidence so you can render impartial justice and can earn the confidence of the public in the Senate's willingness to hold a fair trial. Under the Constitution, the Senate does not just vote on impeachments. It does not just debate them. Instead, it is commanded by the Constitution to try all cases of impeachment. If the founders intended for the House to try the matter and the Senate to consider an appeal based on the cold record from the other chamber, they would have said so. But they did not. Instead, they gave us the power to charge and you the power to try all impeachments. The framers chose their language and the structure for a reason. As Alexander Hamilton said, the Senate is given awful discretion in matters of impeachment. The Constitution thus speaks to senators in their judicial character as a court for the trial of impeachments. It requires them to aim at real demonstrations of innocence or guilt, and it requires them to do so by holding a trial.
Live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial of President Donald J. Trump on KPFA and KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF 88.1 FM in Fresno, K248BR 97. FM in Santa Cruz. This is the lead impeachment manager, Adam Schiff.
In the history of this republic, including those for Presidents Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton. Indeed, in President Andrew Johnson's Senate impeachment trial, the House managers were permitted to begin presenting documentary evidence to the Senate on the very first day of the trial. The House manager's initial presentation of documents in President Johnson's case carried on for the first 2 days of trial, immediately after which witnesses were called to appear in the Senate. This has been the standard practice in prior impeachment trials. Indeed, in most trials, this body has heard from many witnesses, ranging from three in President Clinton's case to 40 in President Johnson's, and well over 60 in other impeachments. As these numbers make clear, the Senate has always heard from key witnesses when trying an impeachment. The notion that only evidence that was taken before the House should be considered is squarely and unequivocally contrary to Senate precedent. Nothing in law or history supports it. To start, consider Leader McConnell's own description of his work in a prior Senate impeachment proceeding. After serving on the Senate Trial Committee in the case of Judge Claiborne, Leader McConnell described how the Senate committee, quote, labored intensively for more than 2 months, amassing the necessary evidence and testimony. In the same essay, Leader McConnell recognized the full body's responsibility for amassing and digesting evidence. There was certainly a lot of evidence for the Senate to amass and digest in that proceeding, which involved charges against a district court judge. The Senate heard testimony from 19 witnesses, and it allowed for over 2,000 pages of documents to be entered into the record over the course of that trial. At no point did the Senate limit evidence to what was before the House. It did the opposite, consistent with unbroken Senate practice in every single impeachment trial, every single one. For example, of the 40 witnesses who testified during President Johnson's Senate trial, only three provided testimony to the House during its impeachment inquiry. Only three. The remaining 37 witnesses in that presidential impeachment trial testified before the Senate. Similarly, the Senate's full first impeachment trial, which involved charges against Judge Pickering, involved testimony from 11 witnesses, all of whom were new to the impeachment proceedings and had not testified before the House. There are many other examples of this point, including the Senate's most recent impeachment trial of Judge Porteous in 2010. It is one that many of you and some of us know well. It, too, is consistent with this long-standing practice. There, the Senate heard testimony from 26 witnesses, 17 of whom had not testified before the House during its impeachment inquiry. Thus, there is a definitive tradition of the Senate hearing from new witnesses when trying articles of impeachment. There has never been a rule limiting witnesses to those who appeared in the House or limiting evidence before the Senate to that which the House itself considered. And that is because, as Senator Hiram Johnson explained in 1934, the integrity of Senate impeachment trials depend heavily upon the witnesses who are called, their appearance on the stand, their mode of giving testimony. There is thus an unbroken history of witness testimony in Senate impeachment trials, presidential and judicial. I would argue in the case of a president, it is even more important to hear the witnesses and see the documents. Any conceivable doubt on this score, and there should be none left, is dispelled by the Senate's own rules for trial of impeachment. Obtaining documents and hearing live witness testimony is so fundamental that the rules of procedure and practice in the Senate when sitting on impeachment trials, which date back to the 19th century, devote more attention to the gathering, handling, and admission of new evidence than any other single subject. These rules expressly contemplate that the Senate will hear evidence and conduct a thorough trial when sitting as a court of impeachment. At every turn, they reject the notion that the Senate would take the House's evidentiary record, blind itself to everything else, and vote to convict or acquit. For example, Rule 6 says the Senate shall have the power to compel the attendance of witnesses and enforce obedience to its orders. Rule 7 authorizes the presiding officer to rule on all questions of evidence, including but not limited to questions of relevancy, materiality, and redundancy. This rule, too, presumes that the Senate trial will have testimony giving rise to such questions. Rule 11 authorizes the full Senate to designate a committee of senators to receive evidence and take testimony at such times and places as the committee may determine. As Rule 11 makes clear, the committee's report must be transmitted to the full Senate for final adjudication. But nothing herein, the rule states, shall prevent the Senate from sending for any witness and hearing his testimony in open Senate or by order of the Senate involving the entire trial in the open Senate. Here, too, the Senate's operative impeachment rules expressly contemplate and provide for subpoenaing witnesses and hearing their testimony as part of the Senate trial. And the list goes on. These rules plainly contemplate a robust role for the Senate in gathering and considering evidence. They reflect centuries of practice of accepting and requiring new evidence in Senate trials. This Senate should honor that practice today by rejecting this resolution. What about the Clinton trial? What about the Clinton trial, it will be argued? Even if we are departing from every other impeachment trial in history, including the present impeachment of President Andrew Johnson, what about the Clinton trial? Aren't we following the same process as in the Clinton trial? The answer is no. First, the process for the Clinton trial was worked out by mutual consent among the parties. That is not true here, where the process is sought to be imposed by one party on the other. Second, all of the documents in the Clinton trial were turned over prior to the trial. All 90,000 pages of them, so they could be used in the House's case. None of the documents have been turned over by the president in this case. And under Leader McConnell's proposal, none may ever be. They certainly won't be available to you or to us during most or all of the trial. If we are really going to follow the Clinton precedent, the Senate must insist on the documents now, before the trial begins. Third, the issue in the Clinton trial was not one of calling witnesses, but of recalling witnesses. All of the key witnesses in the Clinton trial had testified before the grand jury or been interviewed by the FBI, one of them dozens of times, and their testimony was already known. President Clinton himself testified on camera and under oath before the Senate trial. He allowed multiple chiefs of staff and other key officials to testify, again, before the Senate trial took place. Here, none of the witnesses we seek to call, none of them have testified or been interviewed by the House. And as I said, the president cannot complain that we did not call these witnesses before the House when their unavailability was caused by the president himself. And last, as you will remember, those of you that were here, the testimony in the Clinton trial involved decorum issues that are not present here. You may rest assured, whatever else the case may be, such issues will not be present here. In sum, the Clinton precedent, if you're serious about it, if we're really serious about modeling this proceeding after the Clinton trial, the Clinton precedent is one where all the documents had been provided up front, where all the witnesses had testified up front prior to the trial. That is not being replicated by the McConnell resolution, not in any way, not in any shape, not in any form, far from it. The traditional model followed in President Johnson's case and all of the others is really the one that's most appropriate to the circumstances. The Senate should address all the documentary issues and most of the witnesses now, not later. The need to subpoena documents and testimony now has only increased due to the president's obstruction for several reasons. First, his obstruction has made him uniquely and personally responsible for the absences of the witnesses before the House. Having ordered them not to appear, he may not be heard to complain now that they followed his orders and refused to testify. To do otherwise only rewards the president's obstruction and encourages further future presence to defy lawful process in impeachment investigations. Second, if the president wishes to contest the facts and his answer and trial brief indicates that he will try, he must not continue to deny the Senate access to the relevant witnesses and documents that shed light on the very factual matters he wishes to challenge. The Senate trial is not analogous to an appeal where the parties must argue the facts on the basis of the record below. There is no record below. There is no below. This is the trial. Third, the president must not be allowed to mislead the Senate by selectively introducing documents while withholding the vast body of documents that may contradict him. This is very important. The president must not be allowed to mislead you by introducing documents selectively and withholding all of the rest. All of the relevant documents should be produced so there is full disclosure of the truth. Otherwise, there is a clear risk that the president will continue to hide all evidence harmful to his position while selectively producing documents without any context or opportunity to examine their creators. And finally, you may infer the president's guilt from his continuing efforts to obstruct production of documents and witnesses. The president has said he wants witnesses like Mulvaney and Pompeo and others to testify, and that his interactions with Ukraine have been perfect. Counsel has affirmed today that will be the president's defense. His conduct was perfect. It's perfect. Perfectly fine to coerce an ally by withholding military aid to get help cheating in the next election. That will be part of the president's defense, although albeit not worded in that way. But now he has changed course and does not want these witnesses to testify. The logical inference in any court of law would be that the party's continued obstruction of lawful subpoenas may be construed as evidence of guilt. Let me conclude. The facts will come out in the end. The documents which the president is hiding will be released through the Freedom of Information Act or through other means over time. Witnesses will tell their stories in books and film. The truth will come out. The question is, will it come out in time? And what answer shall we give if we did not pursue the truth now and let it remain hidden until it was too late to consider on the profound issue of the president's guilt or innocence? There are many overlapping reasons for voting against this resolution, but they all converge on a single idea: fairness. The trial should be fair to the House, which has been wrongly deprived of evidence by a president who wishes to conceal it. It should be fair to the president, who will not benefit from an acquittal or dismissal if the trial is not viewed as fair, if it is not viewed as impartial. And fair to you senators, who are tasked with the grave responsibility of determining whether to convict or acquit, and should do so with the benefit of all of the facts. And fair to the American people, who deserve the full truth and who deserve representatives who will seek it on their behalf. And with that, Mr. Chief Justice, I yield back.
That's Democratic Representative Adam Schiff of California, who is serving as lead impeachment manager for the House of Representatives, making an argument against the proposed rules for the Senate impeachment trial of U.S. President Donald J. Trump. Want to give you some breaking news about those rules. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky has actually revised his rules resolution that would give both the House managers and Trump's defense team 3 days each to use their 24 hours to make their oral arguments, which means instead of each side having 2 days to use 24 hours, meaning 12 hours a day, that instead they will be given 3 days, which if you divide by three would mean 8 hour days of oral arguments over the days ahead starting tomorrow. So there is a significant rule change. One of the big controversies has been Mitch McConnell saying that each side would have 24 hours to make their oral arguments, and it would have to be done in 2 days, in other words, 12 hours each day. Instead, they now get 3 days, which could mean 8 hours per day. We now turn back to Donald Trump's defense team. This is Jay Sekulow, who is now on the Senate floor. He is Donald Trump's personal lawyer. He has represented Donald Trump during the special counsel's investigation, also defending Trump from congressional subpoenas and from federal prosecutors in New York who are requesting the president's financial records. That case is now in front of the Supreme Court, in which Jay Sekulow will be arguing. This is Jay Sekulow.
Mr. Schiff did say the courts really don't have a role in this. Executive privilege, why would that matter? It matters because it's based in the Constitution of the United States. One manager said that it is you that are on trial, the Senate. He also said that, and others did, that you're not capable of abiding by your oath. And then we had the invocation of the ghost of the Mueller report. I know something about that report. It came up empty on the issue of collusion with Russia. There was no obstruction. In fact, the Mueller report, to the contrary of what these managers say today, came to the exact opposite conclusions of what they say. Let me quote from the House impeachment report at page 16. Although President Trump has at times invoked the notion of due process, an impeachment trial, an impeachment inquiry is not a criminal trial and should not be confused with it. Believe me, what has taken place in these proceedings is not to be confused with due process. Because due process demands, and the Constitution requires, that fundamental fairness and due process, we're hearing a lot about due process is designed to protect the person accused. When the Russia investigation failed, it devolved into the Ukraine. A quid pro quo. When that didn't prove out, it was then bribery or maybe extortion. Or somebody said, one of the members or the members of the House said treason. But instead we get two articles of impeachment. Two articles of impeachment that have a vague allegation about a non-crime allegation of abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Members, managers, right here, before you today, who have said that executive privilege and constitutional privileges have no place in these proceedings, on June 28, 2012, Attorney General Eric Holder became the first United States Attorney General to be held in both civil and criminal contempt. Why? Because President Obama asserted executive privilege. With respect to the Holder contempt proceedings, Mr. Manager Schiff wrote, "The White House assertion of privilege is backed by decades of precedent that has recognized the need for the president and his senior advisors to receive candid advice and information from their top aides." Indeed, that's correct. Not because Manager Schiff said it, but because the Constitution requires it. Mr. Manager Nadler said that the effort to hold Eric Holder, Attorney General Holder, in contempt for refusing to comply with various subpoenas was, quote, politically motivated, and Speaker Pelosi called the Holder matter, and I quote, a little more than a witch hunt. What are we dealing with here? Why are we here? Are we here because of a phone call? Or are we here before this great body because since the president was sworn into office, there was a desire to see him removed? I remember in the Mueller report, there were discussions about, remember, insurance policies. The insurance policy didn't work out so well. So then we moved to other investigations. I guess you would call it reinsurance or an umbrella policy. And that didn't work out so well. And here we are today. Manager Schiff quoted the Supreme Court, and I'd like to make reference to the Supreme Court as well. It was then Justice Rehnquist, later to be Chief Justice Rehnquist, who wrote for the majority in United States versus Russell in 1973. These are the words. "We may someday be presented with a situation which the conduct of law enforcement agents is so outrageous that due process principles would absolutely bar the government from invoking judicial process to obtain a conviction. That day is today." That day was a year ago. That day was in July when Special Counsel Mueller testified. I am not today going to take the time to review, and I will do it later, the pattern and practices of irregularities that have gone on in these investigations from the outset. But to say that the courts have no role, the rush to impeachment, to not wait for a decision from a court on an issue as important as executive privilege, as if executive privilege hasn't been utilized by presidents since our founding. This is not some new concept. We don't waive executive privilege, and there's a reason we keep executive privilege, and we assert it when necessary, and that is to protect the Constitution and the separation of powers. The president's opponents, in their rush to impeach, have refused to wait for complete judicial review. That was their choice. Speaker Pelosi clearly expressed her impatience and contempt for judicial proceedings when she said, "We cannot be at the mercy of the courts." Think about that for a moment. We cannot be at the mercy of the courts. So take Article 3 of the United States Constitution, remove it. We're acting as if the courts are an improper venue to determine constitutional issues of this magnitude? That is why we have courts. That is why we have a federal judiciary. It was interesting when Professor Turley testified before the House Judiciary Committee in front of Mr. Nadler's committee. He said, "We have three branches of government, not two. If you impeach a president, if you make a high crime and misdemeanor out of going to courts, an abuse of power, it's your abuse of power." You know, it's more than that. A lot more than that. There's a lot more than an abuse of power if you say the courts don't apply. Constitutional principles don't apply. Let's start with a clean slate as if nothing happened. A lot has happened. As we proceed in the days ahead, we will lay out our case. We're going to put forward to the American people, but more important, for the Constitution's sake, what's taking place here. But this idea that we should ignore what has taken place over the last 3 years is outrageous. We believe that what Senator McConnell has put forward provides due process, allows the proceedings to move forward in an orderly fashion. 33 days they held on to those impeachment articles. 33 days. It was such a rush of national security to impeach this president before Christmas that they then held him for 33 days. To do what? To act as if they negotiate, the House of Representatives should negotiate the rules of the United States Senate. They didn't hide this. This was the express purpose. This was the reason they did it. We're prepared to proceed, Majority Leader, Democratic Majority Leader. We're prepared to proceed. In our view, these proceedings should begin. I yield the rest of my time to my colleague, the White House Counsel.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. Cipollone.
White House Counsel Pat Cipollone. Thank you, Mr. Chief. We are hearing arguments concerning the rules
a couple of additional
over the trial.
It's very difficult to sit there and listen to Mr. Schiff tell the tale that he just told. Let's remember how we all got here. They made false allegations about a telephone call. The President of the United States declassified that telephone call and released it to the public. How's that for transparency? When Mr. Schiff found out that there was nothing to his allegations, he focused on the second telephone call. He made false, and his colleagues made false allegations about that second telephone call that occurred before the one he had demanded. So the President of the United States declassified and released that telephone call. Still nothing. Again, complete transparency in a way that, frankly, I'm unfamiliar with any precedent of any president of the United States releasing a classified telephone call with a foreign leader. When Mr. Schiff saw that his allegations were false, and he knew it anyway, what did he do? He went to the House and he manufactured a fraudulent version of that call. He manufactured a false version of that call. He read it to the American people, and he didn't tell them it was a complete fake. Do you want to know about due process? I'll tell you about due process. Never before in the history of our country has a president been confronted with this kind of impeachment proceeding in the House. It wasn't conducted by the Judiciary Committee. Now, Mr. Nadler, when he applied for that job, told his colleagues when they took over the House that he was really good at impeachment. But what happened was the proceedings took place in a basement of the House of Representatives. The president was forbidden from attending. The president was not allowed to have a lawyer present. In every other impeachment proceeding, the president has been given a minimal due process. Nothing here. Not even Mr. Schiff's Republican colleagues were allowed into the skiff. Information was selectively leaked out. Witnesses were threatened. Good public servants were told that they would be held in contempt. They were told that they were obstructing. What does Mr. Schiff mean by obstructing? He means that unless you do exactly what he says, regardless of your constitutional rights, then you're obstructing. The president was not allowed to call witnesses. By the way, there's still evidence in the skiff that we haven't been allowed to see. I wonder why. No witnesses. Now, let's think about something else for a second. Let's think about something else. They held these articles for 33 days. We hear all this talk about an overwhelming case. An overwhelming case that they're not even prepared today to stand up and make an opening argument about. That's because they have no case. Frankly, they have no charge. When you look at these articles of impeachment, they're not only ridiculous, they are dangerous to our republic. And why? First of all, the notion that invoking your constitutional rights to protect the executive branch, that's been done by just about every president since George Washington, that is obstruction. That is our patriotic duty, Mr. Schiff, particularly when confronted with a wholesale trampling of constitutional rights that I'm unfamiliar with in this country. Frankly, it's the kind of thing that our State Department would criticize if we see it in foreign countries. We've never seen anything like it. And Mr. Schiff said, "Have I got a deal for you? Abandon all your constitutional rights. Forget about your lawyers. And come in and do exactly what I say. No thank you. No thank you." And then he says he has the temerity to come into the Senate and say, "We have no use for courts." It's outrageous. Now let me tell you another story. There's a man named Charlie Kupperman. He is the deputy national security advisor. He is the number two to John Bolton. Because you have to remember, Mr. Schiff wants you to forget, but you have to remember how we got here. They threatened him. They sent him a subpoena. Mr. Kupperman did what any American should be allowed to do, used to be allowed to do. He was forced to get a lawyer. He was forced to pay for that lawyer. And he went to court. Mr. Schiff doesn't like courts. He went to court. And he said, Judge, tell me what to do. I have obligations that frankly rise to the what the Supreme Court has called the apex of executive privilege in the area of national security. And then I have a subpoena from Mr. Schiff. What do I do? You know what Mr. Schiff did? Mr. Kupperman went to the judge, and the House said, never mind, we withdraw the subpoena, we promise not to issue it again. And then they come here and they ask you to do the work that they refuse to do for themselves. They ask you to trample on executive privilege. Now, would they ever suggest that the executive could determine on its own what the speech or debate clause means? Of course not. Would they ever suggest that the House could invade the discussions that the Supreme Court has behind closed doors? I hope not. But they come here and they ask you to do what they refuse to do for themselves. They had a court date. And they withdrew the subpoena, they evaded a decision, and they're asking you to become complicit in that evasion of the courts. It's ridiculous. And we should call it out for what it is. Obstruction for going to court? It's an act of patriotism to defend the constitutional rights of the president. Because if they can do it to the president, they could do it to any of you, and they could do it to any American citizen. And that's wrong. And Lawrence Tribe, who's been advising them, I guess he didn't tell you that in the Clinton impeachment, he said, it's dangerous to suggest that invoking constitutional rights is impeachable. It's dangerous. And you know what? It is dangerous, Mr. Schiff. So what are we doing here? Okay. We have the House that completely concocted a process that we've never seen before. They locked the president out. Oh, and by the way, will Mr. Schiff give documents? We asked him for documents. We asked him for documents when, contrary to his prior statements, it turned out that his staff was working with the whistleblower. We said, let us see the documents, release them to the public. We're still waiting. So the idea that they would come here and lecture the Senate. By the way, I was surprised to hear that, did you realize? You're on trial. Mr. Nadler's putting you on trial. Everybody's on trial except for them. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. They said in their brief, we have overwhelming evidence, and they're afraid to make their case. Think about it. Think about it. It's common sense. Overwhelming evidence to impeach the president of the United States. And then they come here on the first day and they say, you know what? We need some more evidence. Now, let me tell you something. If I showed up in any court in this country and I said, Judge, my case is overwhelming, but I'm not ready to go yet. I need more evidence before I can make my case. I would get thrown out in 2 seconds. And that's exactly what should happen here. That's exactly what should happen here. It's too much to listen to, almost. The hypocrisy of the whole thing. And what are the stakes? What are the stakes? There's an election in almost 9 months. Months from now, there's going to be an election. Senators in this body the last time had very wise words. They echoed the words of our founders. A partisan impeachment is like stealing an election. And that's exactly what we have. We have, talk about the framers' worst nightmare. It's a partisan impeachment that they've delivered to your doorstep in an election year. Some of you are upset because you should be in Iowa right now. But instead, we're here, and they're not ready to go. And it's outrageous. It's outrageous. And the American people won't stand for it, I'll tell you that right now. They're not here to steal one election. They're here to steal two elections. It's buried in the small print of their ridiculous articles of impeachment. They want to remove the President Trump from the ballot. They won't tell you that. They don't have the guts to say it directly. But that's exactly what they're here to do. They're asking the Senate to attack one of the most sacred rights we have as Americans, the right to choose our president in an election year. It's never been done before. It shouldn't be done now. The reason it's never been done is because no one ever thought that it would be a good idea for our country, for our children, for our grandchildren, to try to remove a president from a ballot, to deny the American people the right to vote based on a fraudulent investigation conducted in secret with no rights. Well, I could go on and on, but my point is very simple. It's long past time that we start this so we can end this ridiculous charade and go have an election. Thank you very much, Mr. Chief Justice.
And that's Pat Cipollone, White House counsel, who is leading the Trump defense team in the Senate impeachment trial.
Thank you.
Chuck Schumer, Senate Democratic Minority Leader, has taken the podium.
Mr. Chief Justice, I send an amendment to the desk to subpoena certain documents and records from the White House, and I ask that it be read.
The clerk will read the document. The Senator from New York, Mr. Schumer, proposes an amendment number 1284. At the appropriate place in the resolving clause, insert the following. Section, notwithstanding any other provision of this resolution, pursuant to Rules 5 and 6 of the Rules and Procedure and Practice in the Senate when sitting on impeachment trials, 1, the Chief Justice of the United States, through the Secretary of the Senate, shall issue a subpoena to the Acting Chief of Staff of the White House, commanding him to produce, for the time period from January 1, 2019, to the present, all documents, communications, and other records within the possession, custody, or control of the White House, including the National Security Council, referring or relating to, A, all meetings and calls between President Trump and the President of Ukraine, including documents, communications, and other records related to the scheduling of, preparation for, and follow-up from the President's April 21st and July 25th, 2019 telephone calls, as well as the President's September 25th, 2019 meeting with the President of Ukraine in New York. B, all investigations, inquiries, or other probes relating to Ukraine, including any that relate in any way to 1, former Vice President Joseph Biden, 2, Hunter Biden and any of his associates, 3, Burisma Holdings Limited, also known as Burisma, 4, interference or involvement by Ukraine in the 2016 United States election, 5, the Democratic National Committee, or 6, CrowdStrike, C, the actual or potential suspension, withholding, delaying, freezing, or releasing of United States foreign assistance, military assistance, or security assistance of any kind to Ukraine, including but not limited to the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative, USAI, and Foreign Military Financing, FMF. D, all documents, communications, notes, and other records created or received by Acting Chief of Staff Mick Mulvaney, then National Security Advisor John R. Bolton, Senior Advisor to the Chief of Staff Robert B. Blair, and other White House officials relating to efforts to 1. Solicit, request, demand, induce, persuade, or coerce Ukraine to conduct or announce investigations. 2. Offer, schedule, cancel, or withhold a White House meeting for Ukraine's president. Or 3. Hold and then release military and other security assistance to Ukraine. E. Meetings at or involving the White House that related to Ukraine, including but not limited to 1. President Zelensky's inauguration on May 20, 2019 in Kiev, Ukraine, including but not limited to President Trump's decision to not to attend to ask Vice President Pence to lead the delegation, directing Vice President Pence not to attend, and subsequent decision about the composition of the delegation of the United States. 2. A meeting at the White House on or around May 23, 2019, involving, among others, President Trump, then Special Representative for Ukraine Negotiations, Ambassador Kurt Volker, then Energy Secretary Rick Perry, and United States Ambassador to the European Union, Gordon Sondland, as well as any private meetings or conversations with those individuals before or after the larger meeting. 3. Meetings at the White House on or about July 10, 2019, involving Ukrainian officials Andrei Yermak and Oleksandr Danilenko, and United States government officials, including but not limited to then National Security Advisor John Bolton, Secretary Perry, Ambassador Volker, Ambassador Sondland, to include at least a meeting in Ambassador Bolton's office and subsequent meeting in the wardroom. 4. A meeting at the White House on or around August 30, 2019, involving President Trump, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and Secretary of Defense Mark Esper. 5. A planned meeting later canceled in Warsaw, Poland, on or around September 1, 2019, between President Trump and President Zelensky, and subsequently attended by Vice President Pence. And 6, a meeting at the White House on or around September 11, 2019, involving President Trump, Vice President Pence, and Mr. Mulvaney concerning the lifting of the hold on security assistance for Ukraine. F, meetings, telephone calls, or conversations related to any occasions in which the National Security Council officials reported concerns to National Security Council lawyers, including but not limited to National Security Council legal advisor John Eisenberg regarding matters related to Ukraine, including but not limited to 1, the decision to delay military assistance to Ukraine, 2, the July 10, 2019 meetings at the White House with Ukrainian officials, 3, the President's July 25, 2019 call with the President of Ukraine, 4, a September 1, 2019 meeting between Ambassador Sondland and a Ukrainian official, and 5, the President's September 7, 2019 call with Ambassador Sondland. G. Any.
This is live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial of President Donald J. Trump. And right now you are listening to the Senate clerk reading the language of a resolution of an amendment to the rules resolution that has been brought by Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York. Shortly they will be voting on the amendment, and then later in the day they are anticipated to vote on the final rules resolution that has been brought by the Republican Majority Leader of the Senate, Mitch McConnell. Again, just some breaking news of what has happened since the trial has begun today. Mitch McConnell has revised his rules in a couple of key areas, and this occurred after Susan Collins, Republican senator from Maine, well known to be a centrist, had rejected how the rules previously were, or at least were reportedly was encouraging Mitch McConnell to change the rules. So instead of both the House managers and Trump's defense team having 24 hours that they will have to use up each in 2 days, which would have meant 12-hour days of oral arguments. He has now turned it to 3 days, which is similar to what we had in 1999 with the Senate impeachment trial of Bill Clinton. So now both the House managers and Trump's defense team will have 3 days to use 24 hours. And what that likely will mean is that they will probably go 8 hours per day over the next week or so. Mitch McConnell is now coming to the podium to also speak. This is Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Majority Leader is recognized.
I'd ask for a brief 15-minute recess before the parties are recognized to debate the Schumer Amendment. Therefore, I ask consent the Senate stand in recess, subject to the call of the chair.
Without objection, so ordered.
And so we are now in a 15-minute break. We will have to see, actually, how long that goes. In a moment, we're going to be speaking to Jeffrey Smith, so stay tuned for that. Unless our producers have somebody else that they insist. Again, this is just a 15-minute break. We don't know how long it will go. I will wait for the direction of my producers to let you know, actually, who our guests are live radio as we try to figure this out. So I indicated that Mitch McConnell had already amended his own resolution to give each side 3 days to use 24 hours each for their oral arguments, so probably 8 hours per day. There is another component of the changes, and that is concerning the evidence that has been gathered by the House impeachment inquiry. And reportedly, and according to the original rules resolution, Mitch McConnell was not going to accept the evidence from the House impeachment inquiry until after the oral arguments were done, and senators also had the opportunity to ask questions. Then after that whole process was over, he was going to have an up or down vote by the Senate as to whether or not to accept the evidence that has been acquired by the House impeachment process. That means all the documents that they have. That means the reports that the House impeachment inquiry has produced from the Intelligence Committee and also from the House Judiciary Committee. And that includes the testimony that for several weeks we had watched in the House Intelligence Committee as it was conducting the investigation into we'll call it the Ukraine caper. Well, Mitch McConnell has revised that rule to now say that that evidence that has been acquired by the House impeachment inquiry will be admissible right from the get-go of the Senate trial. So that's a pretty significant change as well. The reason that Mitch McConnell, according to published reports who talked to staffers for the Republican leadership in the Senate, the reason they originally were not going to allow that information right from the get-go to be part of the official record in the Senate impeachment trial is they claimed, as we heard today, both from Pat Cipollone, White House counsel, and Jay Sekulow, the personal attorney for Trump, saying that Trump was and his team was blocked out of the process in the House of Representatives. In particular, just to explain how that all happened and what everyone's talking about, the White House was not allowed to participate in the investigation that the House Intelligence Committee was undertaking concerning the situation with Ukraine. Now, the House says that was the investigation because this time there was no special prosecutor like Ken Starr in 1999 because Attorney General Will Barr himself refused to move forward with investigating the whistleblower's complaint concerning the call between Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and also Donald Trump because the Justice Department refused to investigate it. The House took up the investigation itself. So the House and the House Intelligence Committee says that that was part of the investigation. The White House was not able to participate in that part, in that process. What the White House would have been able to, participate in is the hearings that were occurring in the House Judiciary Committee that were chaired by Gerald Nadler. The White House refused and declined to participate in that process. And so if you talk to House Democrats, they will say the White House had every opportunity to participate in the impeachment inquiry. It chose not to. So that's sort of where we get into that debate. It now turns out, though, again, because of pressure from Susan Collins of Maine and also reportedly Rob Portman, another Republican, he's from Ohio, had pressured Mitch McConnell to make those changes about having 8-hour days of oral arguments rather than 12 over 3 days for each side. And then also having the information from the House impeachment inquiry, having the evidence submitted right from the get-go. So those are significant changes. Those are two issues that were, you know, very much opposed by Democrats. I don't know if any Democrats are still going to vote for this resolution. We just saw the amendment by Chuck Schumer, the Democratic Senate minority leader. This is about witnesses and about saying right up front that there will be witnesses that will be called in this trial. According to the rules by Mitch McConnell, the proposed rules anyways, witnesses would not be taken up until after the oral arguments and also after the 16 hours of questions from senators. After that, the Senate would vote as to whether or not to have witnesses. And if they do determine to have witnesses, according to the rules by Mitch McConnell, they will then have to have closed depositions first, and that they would decide after the closed depositions of everyone who would be subpoenaed, who would and who would not make a public appearance in the Senate chamber as a witness in this whole process. Or perhaps they would even just do the video of the depositions the way they did in the Clinton impeachment in 1999. So Chuck Schumer has brought an amendment to the floor, saying that right from the get-go, immediately in the rules now, that it would claim that there would be the ability to call witnesses. Doubtful his amendment will pass, but we'll find out whether or not it will pass here in just a few minutes. So what we're hearing today is the Senate, really the first substantive day of the Senate impeachment trial of President Donald Trump. And they are debating the House rules. But we're not hearing senators debate the House rules. That's because they are not allowed to talk during the Senate trial. Who gets to talk during the Senate trial are the House floor managers and the Trump's defense team. And they're the ones who will actually, when they come back from this recess, who will start to debate the rules and Chuck Schumer's his amendment to the rules. If the senators begin to debate themselves, between themselves, and that could happen, it will actually be closed to the cameras, closed to the microphones, and closed to the public, because it will be considered in a trial, and since they're considered to be the jury, a deliberation. And it would be as though they would be deliberating among themselves. And so there would be no possibility of actually having the Senate hear the debate over the rules from senators themselves. We'd only hear it from the, again, the Democratic House floor managers and Trump's defense team. You are listening to KPFA in Berkeley, KPFB in Berkeley, KFCF 88.1 FM in Fresno, K248BR 97.5 FM in Santa Cruz, online kpfa.org. This is KPFA's live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial of President Donald J. Trump. I'm Mitch Jezrich, and I'm very happy to be able to welcome to the program Brenda Wineapple. Brenda Wineapple is an author, a historian. She has written a book, an important book that I spent a lot of time this past weekend with, concerning the first impeachment in U.S. of a sitting president, anyways, in U.S. history, that of Andrew Johnson in 1868. It's called The Impeachers, The Trial of Andrew Johnson and the Dream of a Just Nation. Brenda Wineapple, it is my good pleasure to welcome you back to this radio station.
Great to be here. Thanks so much, Mitch.
So what are your thoughts here as somebody, and I specifically read the chapters on the Senate trial in your book over the weekend, as I was also watching, went to C-SPAN's archives online and was watching the Senate impeachment trial too, just because I've never covered one of these before. I've covered almost everything that Congress does, except for except for this. So what were your thoughts watching this?
Well, I had so many thoughts. It's going to be hard to get them all in a very short period of time. One had to do with the difference between, or as we understand it, what the House of Representatives is tasked to do and the Senate is tasked to do. In other words, the House of Representatives votes to impeach, which they did in the case of Johnson and they did in the case of Trump just recently. And then there's